Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's your girl Cy Brown, and you know what today is. Today we're talking politics for the full hour. We have a lot to talk about just during today's show. Just let's get some quick, you know, house cleaning stuff in. Follow me on Twitter, www.twitter.com/liferemixed. You know I bring you the hottest guests, the best issues, and just, you know, follow me on Life Remixed on Twitter. I'm sending out a bunch of updates. I joined the gym yesterday, and I swore I was going to get up this morning and go to the gym, and I didn't. I ended up having a brownie and a cup of coffee with milk. Oh gosh, I feel so guilty. So maybe after the show today, I'll head on over to the gym. Big shout out to all the gyms that are offering discounts, because one of the gyms I went to, they were like, yeah, it's only $99 to join, whatever, whatever. And then it's like this crazy astronomical fee every month. And I was a member of New York Sports Club, and New York Sports Club was costing me $75 a month. So I definitely couldn't get with that. I'm not trying to pay New York Sports Club $75 a month knowing I'm not even going. So, you know, on that note, just some other stuff. I have a great guest. I'm going to bring him in a second. I'm so amped. I'm so excited. It's funny because you all know I worked in the hip-hop industry for so many years, like way too many years, and I'm connecting with more people in the industry now that I'm not in the industry than when I was in the industry. You know, I went to high school in New York City, so everybody dated everybody at some point. You know, just growing up in the 80s and early 90s, you know, living in Jersey, going to high school in New York City, you see a lot of stuff. So it's definitely a pleasure to hang out with some of the people I went to high school with, or be like, yo, you know, my so-and-so dated somebody else, but, you know, before we start today's show, Politics Remix, I'm trying to get all this stuff in because I don't want to waste a second of time for today's show. Big shout out to D Nice. I first met D Nice like many years ago. I think we were probably still in high school, and then we bumped into each other again when I was working for KRS. He's like a photographer now. And he has this website called True Hip Hop Stories. Let me tell you, he has like these little vignettes of hip hop icons, and they're just telling, you know how everybody's like, yo, that's true story. My son, who's a teenager right now, everything out of his mouth is like, Ma, true story, true story. But anyway, I watched one that he did with Dana Dane. He did one with Moni Love. I've watched a couple of them, but the one I watched this morning was with Dana Dane. So big shout out to D Nice. He's a photographer, and I think he just got married to Melinda Williams not too long ago from Soul Food. But y'all know this show is not about gossip or anything like that, but I'm all about giving props to people that are doing big things, and he definitely deserves that. So right now we are going to get into the show, Politics Remix. I mean, it's a lot to talk about. President Barack Obama today is going to be addressing the nation about all the stuff that's going down with the Get Down, with the money, and where's the money going, and the banks, and all of that stuff. So on Facebook, I saw Mr. Willie Esco, and I'm like, yo, I dig him. I dig his style. Will you be on the radio? He's like, yo, Cy, I'm down. I'll do it. You know, everybody knows the show has a little hip-hop swagger, but I think it's time for hip-hop to stand up. We're grown-ups now. We have kids. We have to be a little bit more responsible, so it's definitely my pleasure to have him on the show, so we're going to pipe him in right now. Mr. E, are you with us?
I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, you're hanging out with me.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining me right here on Life Remix Radio today.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Like I said, I was ready to rock whenever you were ready.
Yeah, you said that, so I'm amped. And it's funny because, you know, I guess I'm a fan. I am a fan. I'm not too proud to say I'm a fan. So,
okay.
I'm honored. You know, everybody crosses paths at certain times. And as I said at the top of the show, I worked in the industry for so long, and I'm actually having conversations with people more now than I did when I was in the industry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Facebook is a hell of a site.
Yo, I love it. On top of finding my first boyfriend, I found you.
Right.
We're going to get right into today's show. Our chat room is open and it's live. I see everybody starting to join in. If you have any questions, the studio line is now open, 347-633-9113. Also, hit us up in the chat room. It's open. And, you know, before we even get started about any economic policies and where is this money going, what is your take on President Obama?
Oh, President Obama, I was probably before any of my actual black friends believed that he could win, I was probably, you know, really excited about his nomination. I know when he spoke at the Democratic National Convention for potential President Kerry, I knew then that this guy is going to be a powerful person in politics. I did not know his politics per se, but I know the words coming out of his mouth were carefully selected and very wisely positioned, and he took that momentum like any smart person and rolled it into the next campaign. And this is the person we needed. Like, this is a godsend for all the listeners out there. He's well versed, and my son is half black, so one thing that I can share the goals of African-American community and still have a little bit more hope, because I can't see it from your perspective, so I'm blissfully naive in being able to believe that Barack could actually win, when my other family members, even my son's grandmother, was like, I don't know if he can win. I was like, believe in God, he's going to be able to do it. If you guys just all band together early,
right,
you know, the sooner the better. So I believe back when Kerry was running for office that he can do it. Me and my friend thought 2020 he was going to run, but actually, you know, I knew that he had the opportunity. And Senator Daschle, the guy who just got sort of embarrassed about his tax, was the main guy. That's why he got that position. He got offered that position because he was the main person that said, you need to run. And that's the white man telling him, you need to do this because I see it. And that's why he got the position. And, yes, people mess up on their taxes all the time. But when I saw all that happen, I was like, yeah, this is a godsend. We need this person right now.
Well, I've had a special friend who I just, you know how you have your close circle of friends, and at the onset, you know, your group of advisors, people that are going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear, and they were all like, this show actually has a very spiritual slant to it. Like, on Thursdays, we have an actual Bible study at 12 noon, and I was told, Cy, he sent from God.
Yeah.
And I'm like, get out. This guy is not going to win. And my listeners have heard me say this, and I've tucked my tail under. I'm like, he doesn't. Ain't nobody voting for anybody black.
Right. Yeah.
And when he won Iowa, I was like, whoa.
But you got to understand, also psychological. I have this discussion with my friends also all the time. It's like the psychological aspect also helped that he's not totally – His light-skinned complexion, and it was all well put together through God, through whatever you want to call a higher power. He's perfect person for this role in history. Then we will progress, you know. It won't matter the complexion or the history of half white or half black. The barrier has been broken, you know. So I think that we harp on, yes, he's black, but I looked at it as a person of hope. And he's coincidentally black, and he could see my perspective. He knows who Snoop Dogg is. He knows what Urban Wear is. He knows my perspectives, and that was more important than anything. But, you know, it helped us a lot that the gentleman is good-looking, light-skinned, and I always adjust to my friends. You know, this is the first step because, you know, we're going to move down the spectrum from black to Latino down the line. And, you know, even recently, which I probably caught your attention with the Governor Jindal was on the press. Even, although I don't see his respective views, but he's Indian. So the door has been open, wide open now. And it's going to be a beautiful thing to see because it's going to level the playing field on many different levels, from presidency to, you know, your local mayor, you know.
Well, I don't feel I properly introduced you, and I would be remiss in doing that because you have accomplished so much, and because you brought up the fact that Barack Obama is white and your child is half black. Let everybody know a little bit about your background. I don't want to screw it up. I want to make sure your story is told in your words, because who you are plays a very major role in the browning, if that's a good or bad word to use, of what's happening right now and how all things are possible. So tell us how you made it to where you are, and then we'll move more into politics.
Well, my name's Willie Escobar Montañez. I am Puerto Rican, born and raised in Newark, New Jersey. At an early age, I was really introduced, you know, first I'm Latin, then I'm urban. So I have a Latino urban experience or position in life, and I'm able to be that Latin face in the black crowd and be comfortable with that. You know, early on in the 70s, I moved into an area in Newark that was just predominantly Latino, and then towards my teenage years, I moved in an area that was black. And being able to make those adjustments and adapt to my society has allowed me to be well-versed in both industries, as far as being Latino, in the Latino industry, from politics to clothing, and an African-American community, well-accepted clothing designer. And I say I'm Latin first because I design from a Latin perspective, but I was blessed at a since 1996 to be able to do what I love. I was a graffiti writer, got into a lot of trouble. Then I went to breakdancing. And after breakdancing, I decided to go back and revisit art. I went to St. Benedict's Prep in Newark before it was a big, big thing in basketball and soccer. And,
yeah, that's a good school.
And my son's going there, actually. And,
nice.
And I went to... You know, I took the bull by the horns. I went to Rutgers for 2 years, and then I decided to move on and actually be aggressive in pursuing what I felt was my goal, is become a designer. Now, at the time, there was no urban designers. There was no such thing as urban. It was just young men's, and the industry was full of garmentos, and that was basically older gentlemen that, you know, ran it from either Asian or Chinese or Jewish perspective on how to make money in the garmental industry, and then there was no minorities, meaning Latino or black at all. So I was, again, it was perfect timing. So I see things, you know, as a godsend. You know, it was perfect timing that I got out of FIT in 1989, went to work in the industry, took my lumps, and as soon as I went to work in the industry, it was, you know, I was looking at it from a perspective, if this is what my life's going to be, working in industry 9 to 5, I'm very content and happy because I mapped out my goal and I achieved my goal. The gravy was when urban came along, I identified exactly, yo, this is what I was meant to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I need to pursue this. I need to figure out a way to get money, put my designs on paper, and make it happen. It just so happens I ended up being probably the only successful or the biggest Latino urban designer in urban fashion. And the timing was perfect, and everyone accepted me. I partnered up with a variety of artists in 1996 to present day. I started Willie Esco in 1996. I parted ways with my partners who actually backed FUBU in around 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I parted ways with a couple of rappers. You guys may know that. And,
I'm not here to talk about the bad stuff.
That's part of my story. I mean, I partnered up with Nas because it was something that was sort of forced up, because it was a template in fashion. You partner up with a rapper and you're going to make some money. So
right.
I did it. As a learning process, I learned that, you know, I'm more talented in doing exactly what I want to do than having to partner up with any rapper right now. Rappers are a complement to what I'm doing, but they're not the main thing. But I had to learn that. And in 1996, I started that. And by 2004, I was already done with Esco, and I wanted to part ways. I partnered up with, actually, Afeni Shakur, and created a brand called Machiavelli Branded.
I love her. I did an event with her in Atlanta. Sweet lady.
She's incredible. I met her in 1996 also because I was looking for money for Esco, and Pac had just passed, and I met her, and it was an incredible meeting, but it came back full circle when I wanted to do his line in 2004. So 2004 allowed me to really get some financial freedom, because I realized in urban hip hop, being Latino, the competition, you know, with all the other brands coming out,
mm-hmm.
Puff coming out, you had Jay-Z coming out, Rockaway, Dame, and I'm cool and I love competition, but I realized that this wave that's coming, that was like towards the late 90s and early 2000, I was not going to be able to survive it because it was just the artists have much more platform than me.
Yes.
So I decided to partner up with the biggest, the Black Elvis of artists, like Tupac. So I put the brand together.
He never dies.
He's incredible. When I really did the research on him and put the brand together, it was meant to be. And I was able to put that together, and simultaneously, we actually one of my last duties for my partners, we acquired Coogee out of bankruptcy. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the FUBU guys, Samsung and LCN and all these.
Yeah.
Guys, they acquired the rights to Coogee, and they put Coogee on the map. I put the brand together for them, and then continued on to do Machiavelli for a couple years. But in 2006, I started my newest venture, which is Blanco Label / LCN. And that's picking up where I left off with Willie Esco. It's my Latin perspective on fashion. And I'm trying to continue what I started at Esco, and it's way more independent because I have that financial freedom now. I have a partner that understands my point of view, understands the demographics and that they're growing, and understands that I'm trying to be and continue to move in the arena where there is zero competition as far as I'm concerned in the sport of a young men's Latino-based business, you know. So that's my story. Any more you want, you can go to BlancoLabel.com. I'm on Facebook all the time.
Of course.
You saw my comments. I don't usually make those comments on Willie Esco. I have a Willie Esco page on Facebook.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, my Blanco Label is on Facebook, and that's where I do a lot of my political rants because I am a political dude. I've watched this 24/7 since
the
Iran
Contra,
okay?
Wow. We really need to, you know what I need to do, and I'm saying it on the air. I need to come get us on video because I have a camera, and my camera, and you're in Jersey, and I'm in Jersey. So we really need to get it on video. We'll have behind the scenes conversation about that because I'm a lover of politics as well, and a good conversation about our political landscape. And it frustrated me a little bit when people were like, yo, that's what's up, I voted for the first time, and
this is, and
I could not give points for that, and I came under a lot of fire, like, you should be happy. I'm like, yo, people died, fought for our right to vote, and I'm happy that you found it in your heart to come out and vote. But you're 38.
Yeah.
You're 37. I cannot give points for that. You're finally catching up to something that you should have been doing, and I'm happy that President Obama made it cool and made it vogue to be politically astute and to get involved with your civic duty.
Right.
Listen to this. Let me throw this question out. Let me just say a couple things to everybody that's in the chat room. Pastor Montan McDonald, I just got your chat. I see you're listening, but you can't chat. A lot of my listeners who listen to the show are at work. So they turn me on at work, and I understand. And True also sent me a note in the chat room that he's heading out to a meeting. He stopped by to show some love. Big ups to a couple of guests I see we have in the chat room. Please feel free to create a username so we can properly acknowledge you. Stephen Walker and LaVon, thanks so much for joining us in the chat room today. Let me throw this question out to you. You're in urban wear, and you know urban wear has that swagger, that baggy look, comfort, jeans with a lot of pockets. Now we have President Barack Obama, fly guy, mellow, really, I mean, just to watch his walk, he has such a swagger. What impact do you think his presence is going to make on urban wear? As a designer, do you think you now maybe need to get into suits or things like that? Because it's almost... It looks as though it's trending to pull up your pants, stop sagging, dress more appropriately, whatever appropriately looks like. What changes do you think you may have to make in your line based on the political landscape?
Well, my line is sort of split up in two already. Number one is the fits are changing, and
mm-hmm.
silhouettes have always been changing since, I'm going to say, since about 2000. Now, I shop the market twice a year. I go to Europe, I go to Amsterdam, I
mm-hmm.
see what's happening in Europe. Europe, although they embrace urban, they still have a certain vibe and a certain look to
mm-hmm.
The way they dress. And it's just, I'm not going to say it's just now catching on, but it's a silhouette that sort of had to grow on us, and it's slowly eating away at the traditional urban consumer who used to dress baggy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got a couple holdouts. Now, I'm going to say if you were to put the image of apparel on urban from A to Z on a scale, you'd have Kanye at one end of the spectrum, and you'd have 50 Cent at the other. It's a
right.
perfect way to sort of look at it. And in between, you got people that dress baggy but sort of are slimming up. Puffs, I would say, probably right in the middle. Jay-Z's right in the middle. Don't want to lose their roots in urban, but they're
right.
slimming up a little bit. And if you look at it from that perspective, it's brands fit within those areas, either between Jay and Kanye or Jay and 50, and you can either sink or swim addressing
right.
that fit. But you have to stand for something. For me, my message is I'm the Latin face in the black crowd, so I can sort of address both fits and maintain my message of being Latin. And I address my Latin perspectives through my themes and my vignettes and my collection. So, you know, the slimming up and the modification of the urban look has
mm-hmm.
been a constant thing. And it sort of emanated from California, where a lot of guys were slimming up out of that region because a lot of the prices have gone up and a lot of the stuff that we're wearing. Guys, you could see guys wearing from anything from Rockaware to Rockin' Republic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the taste level, and it's all dictated by imagery you see on TV. You know, if you like the Kanye song, you're going to see what he's wearing. If you like what Jay's rapping about, you're going to see what he's wearing.
Kanye takes it to the head. I love Kanye, but some of the stuff that he wears, God bless him, looks like it belongs on someone who's 10 years old.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just a
but that is,
I
will tell you, if you go to Europe, that is normal. So it's not to be, you know, I can understand it and not... I could say it's a little too tight for me, but because I'm a little older. But we're
right.
talking about now, you know, from that end of the spectrum, look at it from casual sportswear. Now the President Obama adds another perspective on it, in that the older generation, Jay-Z, myself, all these guys, you know,
mm-hmm.
All these guys have attained a certain degree of wealth and are now dressing the part. They can dress down to address the consumer, and then they can dress up to address the shareholder. You know, so it's like
right.
You wait. I mean, Barack is a little conservative, but the again, if you ask Kanye to dress, he's gonna be wearing, you know, Alexander McQueen, and 50's gonna be wearing probably, you know,
right
by Armani. You know, so
right.
It's just a choice, but it is progressing. We're getting older. We can't wear jeans all the time. And the baggy hanging off the pants thing, it fits a certain type of day, a type of day that you're having. You may feel like you do. You know, when I'm designing, I don't really have to worry about buttoning up my pants, letting them sit.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I revert back to those measures. When I have to go to an event, I get dressed up and I put on what I like, you know.
I think it's difficult, and it's amazing how urban fashion, and I find a thread between urban fashion and now what's going on in politics, because what's happened, I have two sons, one is 19 and one is 15, and working so much for years in the industry, just as a publicist, you know, publicist, you have to have your best foot forward, you have to be thin, and I got tired of it. I just was like, I want to be Psy. I just want to be me. I don't want to have to worry about all of the fluff that goes along with it. But as a result, my children were raised in the industry, and they were raised in the industry in the 90s, going to Hot 97 Summer Jam, and, you know, we were joking. My son, we had the booth, you know, at it used to be Continental Airlines Arena, but, you know, you have the booth with the little food, and you're looking down at the stage. That's the environment that my sons grew up in. So they have their clothing is very indicative of what's urban and what's street. And now I'm having a very difficult time with my 19-year-old. He doesn't want to put on a button-up shirt.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't want to put, and now I'm angry at myself because I'm trying to explain to him. I'm like, listen, you know, look at our president. Look at Jay-Z. And I never thought I would be one of those parents. I'll tell you, I'm 37 years old. I never thought I would be one of those parents, pull up your pants, button your shirt. But now it's like, dude, look, you're 19, you graduated high school, you're moving on to college, community college. Jay-Z's dressing up, Kanye's dressing up, but he's still looking at the urban influences in the stores like, nah, that's not my style.
Right.
So it's like I wish, and if I could even put it out there, that they would put a bigger face on that I'm getting my grown man on instead of I look like I'm standing on a corner.
Right, yeah. I mean, my son is, I'm letting him find his way as far as fashion is concerned. He's stuck in urban also. He doesn't see the forest from the trees yet, but you got to allow them
right.
to sort of find their way. Once their friend says, you know, I'm wearing this designer, that designer, then they get influenced. So I need
right.
for him, I need to make sure he's around positive influences because the message will get through. It just has to be said by someone else. And even though my son, who I said, you go to website, Google me, see what I've done. Okay, he's
mm-hmm.
still not. He's not impressed. He's like,
right.
You know, that's old. And I'm like, I understand what you, and I said, I just shot for my last ad campaign. I shot Willie the Kid, DJ Drama, all these guys.
I love Drama. Oh,
yeah,
my goodness, I miss him when I lived in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's like automatically anybody you're messing with that might be corny. So I'm like,
right.
trust me, they're not. And the wonderful thing is that I don't really get on them so much. It's just like, I am so lucky to be able to understand what's going on in his head because we're cut from the same cloth.
Mm-hmm.
The music on the radio, the same way. You know, I turned to Hot 97. I wanted to listen to Miss Info, and
mm-hmm.
he's like, turn it up. So I can understand his perspective, and my duty as parents just to make sure he's around positive people that have good aspirations in becoming an adult, because that's going to rub off on him. And I wasn't around positive people, but I somehow figured out a way to weed out who was bad for me and make a way for myself. I have a duty to him to do the same thing, but he's fully aware of it now.
Well, you know, I look at it as we're the first generation to be fully engaged with our children. Fully, fully engaged in all facets of their life. I don't want to listen to my father's music. I don't want to listen to the Temptations. I have no connection to the Four Tops. You know, I don't put creases in their pants unless they were a pair of Lees back in 1987. But we're the first generation to share this, so many similarities with our children. How can we translate our love for hip-hop, your love for hip-hop, my love for hip-hop, but yet make them responsible citizens and say, listen, you have to vote, you have to be part of the political process, be engaged in your local community. How do we do that?
Well, you gotta, I mean, your son or daughter will follow what you do. Like, for instance, when it was time to campaign for Barack Obama, I donated money, number one. Number two is I said, you know, when it's time, when he needs me to go put out stuff, on people's lawns and stuff, and I live in, mm-hmm. in a really conservative neighborhood. We're going to do it because he's going to see me do this. And I said, trust me, you don't understand what's going on right now, Ari. But once you look back, you know, and I'm gone, you're going to see, wow, you know. So you have to really put those words in action. He's going to watch you, what you do, or she's going to watch what you do. So on a Saturday afternoon, we can easily lay up and play Nintendo. But mm-hmm. we were putting up signs. We went to the local office and made phone calls, did paperwork.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And I just felt way more fulfilling than I've ever felt in a long time in my life because I knew this is history for Barack, of course, history
mm-hmm.
for the nation, but I made history in my son's mind. He don't understand it, but it will be later on in life, and I took documented everything because it's my personal. I want him to understand, like, this barrier is being broken down right now. It's huge. It's huge. It's immense. And to be able to share that with him is lets me know there's a higher power. Let me know there's a God. There's a loving spirit looking at
me. Oh, yeah. Do you believe that now we're going to erase the color line of politics? I grew up in a biracial home in Greenwich Village. And so I honestly say I really don't see color. I see it because it's there. But, you know, everybody I grew up with was mixed, Puerto Rican and black. It was just mixed.
Yeah.
But there's a large part of the country that didn't grow up in Newark. It didn't grow up in the Village. It didn't grow up in Jersey City. They see color loud and clear.
Yeah.
And make no bones about it. I put a post out on Facebook that, now that we're moving to a colorless society, is Black History Month still relevant or necessary? Do you believe we're moving to a colorless society?
In certain factions, certain tribes, we are. And what I mean by that is, if you look at what's happening today in society, Barack was able to do something that was started by, you know, Rosa Parks. Essentially, you know, it's like
mm-hmm.
he's able to put the finishing touches on it, but the work is never going to be done. Now, if you look at, for myself, I don't see color, but I'm aware of it. I put everything in artist perspective, you know. If
mm-hmm.
you go from the spectrum of white to black, you know, white is on one side, black's on the other.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in between sort of gets lost in the sauce, and that's how I feel about my Latin culture, you know, so we get
mm-hmm.
mixed and we can go white. We have it's good advantage and it's a bad advantage because we get sometimes lost. But if you look at from my perspective is I don't see color unless, you know, and if I'm tempted to, I do a little bit more research on it and see if that's the case. Now, the color lines being erased is, yes, it's a wonderful thing, but if you look at what the Republicans are doing, you know, they nominated Mr. Steele as head of the Republicans. And
I was a little taken aback by that. I think that was a little patronizing, personally.
It's erasing the color back. You know what I mean? So they're using that gimmick, the technique, what we take as a true, you know, heartfelt movement towards unity in America, and they're using it for their political gains. And this gentleman who it may have his own goals in politics, and everyone has their goals, but he was not able to say, you know what, I'm not going to participate. Like Colin Powell said, he's Republican, I'm falling back. I don't want no
party. I love that. I'm so proud of him, and I'm now a humongous fan of Colin Powell because he saw things going awry, and he's like, yo, I'm good.
Well, you know,
I'm good.
Reality is a lot of people don't comprehend that there's a lot of dead soldiers and on the blood, the hand, you know, all that blood is on, some of it's on his hands. He ain't going to be able to get that off. You know,
I know that's right.
Going to the grave with that. There are 19, you know, I would tell my son all the time, look how many people, like, it was a front page news, now it's not. So it's these 19-year-old kids are dying, and it's forgotten. You know, and I really get upset about, like, this kid is not going to have a girlfriend, wife, family. So a lot of things were changed in our world that going into war. But what the Republicans are doing is now using this unifying moment as a gimmick. And they got
yeah.
in office. You got three governors and Republican governors are going to choose to turn down the stimulus money offered to them because they're going to be running for president. So
that's whack.
Yeah, it's you're not going to provide for your constituents any money because you want to run for president. Meanwhile, you know, you're going to put it under the guise that we're unified. You know, I can do what I want for my constituents. The government's going to want their money back. You know, they're going to look at the fine print and say, okay, the government wants their money back after 2 years if you keep taking the money. But
right.
People hear the talking points every Sunday, every night.
Right.
And these Republicans are only want to get control of the politics again, and they've lost control. And the thing is that Obama is so clever. He is genius in his wordplay. From
how so? Let's get into that.
You gotta think about. He came, and of course he's dealt with the fake birth certificate. He's not born in the U.S. You gotta think about that. Then you got the Reverend issue. He had to address.
Mm-hmm.
He not only addressed the Reverend issue. He complimented it with addressing how black fathers were absent. You know, and this is an opportunity. Like, take this opportunity. Yes, you can put me on the firing line, but this is an opportunity for us to straighten a lot of things out. And he flipped that whole scenario, and it went away. But that was his wordplay, you know. So
he's mellow.
Yeah. And recently, as recent as, you know, people, he just said it last night. He's like, you guys want to take 10% of the stimulus program, use those talking points to eliminate all the positivity, 90% in the rest stimulus. So he's saying to them, look, I know what you're doing. He's putting on a platform. I hope everyone listens tonight because I never was one to listen to addresses, but I'm going to listen tonight. And he's so clever in his wordplay because he's going to call out the governors that are going to run for president in 4 years and don't want to take the money. There is certain little things that those governors can do because they can take the money after they make a public notification. I'm not
making
money, but they can take the money on the low. People don't know that. And he is going to call them out. So he'll go to, you don't want to take it? I'll give the money to someone else, and he'll make that public. You know, the governor of Louisiana, Jindal, don't want to take it. The mayor said, you know what, I'll take it. You know, and Barack will say, here, you can have that money. You know, so the constituents suffer, and he's able to address every point clearly, which we, number one, a president that's smart like that, we haven't had in 8 years.
Oh, baby. You know what? I put a note out on Twitter that Barack Obama is bringing intelligence, you know, common sense, and hand-eye coordination back to the White House.
Right. Yeah, and that's
because this thing that we had the last couple of years, what blows my mind, Willie, is that when Clinton left office and our esteemed last president came in, there was money there.
Right.
Not only is there not money there, but we're in the hole. That's bad business all the way around. I can't see how anybody can justify or explain what happened aside from incompetence or the fact that powers that be were trying to make the United States subservient to other nations by bankrupting us through this war. That gets under my skin because there was money there before he got there, and now it's all gone, and now we're in debt. In 8 years? How is that possible?
That first month in office, he started using that money. He told us, like, I'm going to spend this money, guys.
He did.
And people don't remember, like, we have money. Yes, okay, Clinton had an issue, personal issue with Monica Lewinsky, and that's what
whatever.
Whitewater issue with the Clintons also was an issue. And because of the lack of transparency, it created enough doubt to get Bush in office. So,
right.
So what Obama's doing is looking at all the mistakes that Clinton made. He's going to perfect those mistakes. He's bringing in transparency to the office. Like it or not, you know, the budget deficit that we're running now did not even include the military expenditures. So it's going to be even worse than what we expected. But he said, this is what you guys, we need this. We need to see reality. Like it's like us individually going out and spending money every night, knowing your paycheck ain't going to cover it. You know,
mm-hmm.
You don't want to look at the real numbers. So he's bringing that reality to us. Bush, as soon as he came in office, I was at ESCO 2000, and I knew, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be bad. And people didn't comprehend. I told my friends, I was like, guys, this is going to be bad. And they're
mm-hmm.
like, they weren't paying attention. And that's what half of America was not paying attention to, him deregulate Wall Street, allowing all his friends to get in office to pull the money out. If you just look at the timeline, like last summer we were spending a lot of money on gas. That
mm-hmm.
was him. That was him deregulating all that so he could take all the money, all the disposable income left.
I said the same thing.
Before I bounce, it's like robbing the piggy bank. I'm going to take your last little bit of
said that.
Out. So much that he has done is criminal, and, you know, that will be brought to light. I know Obama will hopefully bring that to light, because the more the Republicans push him, the more likely he's like to use it as a tool to you know, balance everything, because right now they're looking at Bush, his war crimes, all these other issues, and it's going to be independent counsel. Pelosi's going to be looking for this, and that's what we need. We need the transparency to be able to go in there and look at our mistakes, and that's what he's doing. He don't want to look back, but I think that if they give him hard enough time, he's going to be like, all right, you know,
right.
Let me open up the books now. Let's see what you guys did wrong, because I'm not going to have this all on me. But what we need to be focused on, what the audience to understand, it's not over. In 2 years, we need to vote more Republicans out of office
mm-hmm.
because they have a nasty agenda right now. And
mm-hmm.
once we get the Democrats in office, we still got to check them, because
power
corrupts the mind. And so far, Obama's been doing good, but it's only 37 days, you know? So it's
right.
Who knows what's going to happen? He's not God, but he has good intentions. But you know, he's going to want to. He may fall. He's not inhuman. You know what I mean? So I think that we need to sort of look back at all the faults that we did and sort of correct them. I think Obama's doing that to some extent. It's just we can't do it all in 36 days. You know?
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
They're placing these. Ridiculous, you know, I it makes me cringe. I'm a news junkie. I think in my office, in my house, I need to just put, I have these big, beautiful walls. I need to put, like, flat screens so I can check all of them, because my poor thumb is so worn out flipping channel surfing. Everybody is so critical of President Barack Obama. And I'm like, yo, he's not even in the 30 days. Everybody gets, you go to work for Pepsi, they don't say anything for 90 days.
Right.
Everybody's on the job for 90 days before they start passing judgment. At least 60 days they'll give you before they start thinking if you're going to give the man a break. He has spoken to us and respectfully addressed this country about very critical infrastructure issues, moral issues, ethical issues on a host of fronts, more than Bush ever dealt with us his entire 8 years in office.
Right.
But yet he's still being criticized. And then you have losers like Rush Limbaugh willing to let this country flounder just for the sake of he doesn't want Barack Obama in office. It gets under my skin, and I'm sure you can hear my level of frustration increasing, because this is bananas.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous.
Well, again, that's all they're concerned with is the power. Like the funny thing is that Democrats believe in more government. If you look at the way the situation is, our deregulation of Wall Street and the real estate market and the banks, it's like a couple years ago in Jersey, there was this pyramid scheme popping up, you know, and everyone got involved. Even wealthy people got involved. So it's like if you put the temptation out there, it started with Wall Street, filtered down to the real estate market, and then the banks got involved. So everyone is dirty. Everyone is dirty. So
right.
At this point, probably the most prolific gentleman that's out there, Warren Buffett, when he says, you know, who's made his money on Wall Street, when he says the only thing that can save us is government, You know, we're lucky we have a Democratic a president, because that's what Democrats believe in, more government. And the only one, only person, only entity that can save us is the government. They're able to make more money. It may hurt us in the short run, but in the longer perspective, we're going to win, because that's the only entity that can help us. And that's what people in the Republicans don't care. They only care about power, so therefore their agenda is less government is better. Well, less government got us, you know, my house losing money, all my stocks and bonds almost, you know, whittled down to nothing. Less government has created monsters like Bernie Madoff. And people just, you know, it's number one, religion is a big thing, you know.
Yes.
And that rallies people through ignorance, not really knowing. But Rush Limbaugh is a guy whose agenda, he has power on radio and is able to spread that one full sweep, one wide brushstroke over the radio during the day, and really able to spread the message and keep it going, you know. For the listeners, need to know that, like, as soon as Barack got in office, Republicans got together to discuss their agenda. And
of course.
I believe Rush Limbaugh was like, listen, we have our own
what do you
vehicle.
Need?
We got our own vehicle. This guy's going to be a tool for us. He's going to be our beard, and he's going to spread the message that we need to get us back in office. The problem,
you know, it's that good cop, bad cop thing. It's
exactly.
That good cop, bad. I've worked with celebrities, and they'll, you know, behind the scenes, Saida, I don't want to talk to anybody. So
yeah.
What'll happen is, and you, I'm sure you can, you know, you don't have to co-sign it, but you know where I'm coming from. So we're out in public, yeah, let's talk, and da-da-da-da-da, and all of a sudden, I'm sorry, this person can't speak with you, making me look like the bad person, knowing they didn't want to talk to them in the first place. Or something jumps up, Saida didn't give me the message. You know, so it's that knowing, you know, and I knew I played my position because I knew what my position was. And that's exactly what I believe is happening right now in our government. Republicans want to appear as though they're being supportive, relatively moderately supportive of our president, in a very tepid and lukewarm way, while they let Rush Limbaugh, the likes of Rush Limbaugh, go off on these tangents, and they're like, hey, that's free speech, you know, so that's why I take this show that I do, and I thank God every single day that I have a vehicle to spread another message to my generation, to my peers, and get people like you that have something to say, that, you know, really have an opinion and that want to make this place a better place. Let's make things fair and equitable. And one thing what I think Barack Obama is being real gangster is he has a couple of cards. You know, you have to hold a couple cards to your chest.
Yeah.
And I believe if they keep messing with him, he's going to say, you know what, I think it was Citibank that says we don't owe the American public anything. Let's open those books. You want to take another penny of our money? You want to get real live with this? All right, fine. Before you get another penny, let's see what your finances and your real balance sheet looks like. If they ever open those books on Wall Street and gave real transparency, I think this country would be gone in 24 hours, because
right.
There's a lot of stuff I believe they're not revealing to us.
Well, the key thing with that was they took the bulk of the money before Barack became president. That was a big lesson.
Yes.
They kept crying wolf, like, it's going to be over if we don't do this TARP deal, you know, which is troubled assets.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. I was like, oh, my God, these people.
I'm a little leery when they have to rush stuff. When you start telling me hurry up,
yeah,
I get a little leery.
That's like someone saying, come on, let me get that. That's crack fiend stuff. Like, I got to get that. No, relax. And there was nothing Barack could do. He could.
Right.
He was smart. He's like, I don't want no part of that. I'm going to take care of it when I got to take care of it. But Geithner, all these Wall Street guys that had friends on Wall Street, were in charge of cutting those checks. And now, you know, I hope we can fix that, but that piece of the, you know, that extra $300 billion
that's
will
ridiculous.
Be lost. It was basically bonuses for everyone.
I believe that.
So I think Barack's smart enough to attach those little strings to it, and that's why they're sort of screaming a little bit. I'm sad to say, I would think some of the car companies have to go out of business, because if you don't manage your money properly, then you got to go out of business. If you don't manage, you're going to end up on the street. Nobody's going to care about you. It's your responsibility to handle the money. And, you know, it's weird because you have to allow that to happen in order to get everything back on the right track. But these are, you know, presidents of companies that have allowed this to happen, you know. So
you know something, I want to, we're down to the last 10 minutes. Do you have a couple more minutes to spare, or do you have to bounce exactly at one?
No, I got time.
Okay, good. Because this, I see more people joining us in the chat room. Big shout out to Tina Michelle, the artist KCK, How Elegant, LaVon, Stephen Walker, Pastor Montan. Big shout out to Doc, who's a boxing promoter in New Jersey. Actually, his next bout was going to be at the Robert Street until they started shooting like the OK Corral last weekend. So now it's going to be in Atlantic City. So, of course, Mr. Esco, you're more than welcome to attend.
Okay.
Doc, I just gave away some ringside seats. Don't kill me. he dialed in and he's listening to the show via his cell phone. So big shout out to Harvey Doc of HD Promotions. But just to feed into what you were saying, you know, when the gas prices went up last year, I started scratching my head. I said, why all of a sudden are gas prices going at an exorbitant rate from 10 cents a day, 20 cents a day. I said, there's something behind this. And I really, really think before Bush got out, and I'm saying this on record, whoever's going to download it through iTunes or whatever, I'm putting it out there. I think they really conspired to say, we're going to get what we can get before we have to get out of office. I don't think he cares about his legacy.
Well,
one thing, what were we going to say?
Well, I want the listeners to understand that what happens is, to me, my perspective is, once you're going to finish up a job, like say you're going to resign from a job, any one person, you want to take your clientele with you. You want to, you know, if you're cutting hair, if I'm a designer,
you're right.
Hair, this is all they were doing was like, listen, I'm going to do you this solid, but once I resign from here, you got to look out for me. Now, their solids are, you know, is like, okay, turn your head when it's time for us to raise the oil prices. Remember, Bush's dad was heavily into the oil companies. He bankrupted a lot of oil companies before he got there. He's a failed businessman. He did own the Texas Rangers. He sold that for a profit behind closed doors. But the thing is, when people sort of wake up, because it's already done. Like, they took the money out of your pocket. It's a legal way to rob you. And they turned ahead. They allowed the prices. We're going to allow the prices to go up. Now, first quarter last year, if you guys don't recall, first quarter last year, while we were heading into a recession, houses prices were declining. The president, CEO of Exxon, who gets a base salary, I believe about $4 million, took home $400 million.
Are you serious?
$400 million bonus.
Oh, my God.
And I would come in and tell my boys in the office. It just would go over their head. I'm like, he took home a $400 million check for that quarter, for the year. You know what I mean? So
that's ridiculous.
That was their setup for this year. You know, like, you're going to get nice quarterly profits so that when we get out, when you get
right.
that bonus money, you got to look out for me. So
right.
It happened in healthcare. It happens in, you know, oil, all the industries, all the lobbyists that would go to Bush and get their agendas met. Everyone in that administration has to go get a job. So many things
right.
you do. From Dick Cheney, who the following week had his own offices, you know, set up and everything, they have to find new jobs. Because that's all they know. You know, I'm going to go get this job. And I did this favor for this guy, so he owes me. It's already in the books. Look at Scooter Libby, who got indicted. He's staying quiet. Monitor his behavior. You may be able to look back and say, damn, that's how you got me? That's cool. But at least you know, what's going on. People just don't know. And it's going to happen with the Obama administration because it's natural. You know, you meet certain people in the course of a day. You're attracted to certain people, and then you build certain relationships with them, and it may continue past the place you're at. But it's so corrupt, You know, it was so corrupt, so obvious, and people were just moaning and groaning, and the society just said, you know, I'm gonna take the train, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they make adjustments. So it's so sad because all they have to do is we just have to wake up, and I think Obama's putting those tools in place because right now he has a website that you can see all the transparency, all the government.
Yes.
Let's see what happens when a Republican, if he gets back in office, we have ebbs and flows. We go back and forth, you know.
Right.
So if a Republican gets office, whether or not that website's taken down, and how much of a you know upset, how upset or is the American society going to do, going to get when that happens? Because it's going to happen, and it's going to be a way of concealing their actions. Now he's going to try and open up as much as possible, but he's only a man. He's only going to be able to do
right.
so much, you know. But it was so obvious, you know. For me and my friends, I'd sit them down and say, you know, this guy took they couldn't comprehend the number $400 million bonus.
That's ridiculous.
What, yeah, that was what a lot of Wall Street guys were doing too. But that's all because George Bush and his ways.
Well, I think to a certain degree they felt entitled. You know, when you're around a particular type of individual or a group of individuals with money or have received or who have achieved a certain place in society, you will notice that they have a very entitled mentality. I mean, I had a joke with a friend yesterday that for a few years I got speeding tickets and didn't pay my tickets because I'm so and so, and man, I felt entitled or privileged that I shouldn't have to deal with such menial things. And I'm just Cy Brown from Jersey City. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So imagine people who have millions upon millions, $13-14 million houses. They feel entitled. And everybody jumped down that CEO's throat when he got, I can't remember which one, and I don't want to misspeak, when he got a $1 million renovation to his office.
Oh, yeah, the CEO from Merrill Lynch who went to bank.
Exactly. But you want me to tell you something? Look at it from his perspective. And I don't want my listeners to kind of come at me with the dagger, but hear what I'm getting ready to say. Put yourself in his shoes. You have a nanny, your kid's in private school, you've got your yacht, you've got, to him, in his mind, that $1 million renovation is downsized because he was really going to get a $4 million renovation. Do you see what I'm saying? It
yeah.
doesn't make it right. It doesn't. I can't co-sign what he did. But these people are really do not live in the reality in which we all live.
Well, they're now, for that, you bring that. That's funny you bring that up because today was what they're talking about is investigating the Merrill Lynch deal and Bank of America deal because Bank of America bought out Merrill Lynch. Although it was a facet of a Bank of America didn't actually have within their infrastructure, which is, you know, a personal or, you know, building brokerage funds and stuff. The deal was done prior to Lehman Brothers fallout, and it was insider
mm-hmm.
knowledge that, you know, this stuff that, you know, these guys took all these bonuses last quarter. Our oil companies took all the money out of our pocket.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go down this week. And Lehman Brothers was looking for money, but Merrill Lynch, because people know people, let's make this deal happen. Nobody's going to find out. Now he's under fire. There was insider knowledge that things were going to happen, and they sold the company at a much higher
yes.
rate than it was worth. And that cost me because I'm a Bank of America customer, so your losses are going to affect me, the shareholders.
Of course.
And that's illegal. You know, that
yep.
is illegal. And this guy, after he made the deal, went. Now, the bigger picture is that. But what Americans focus on, this guy got a $1 million budget to fix his office.
Exactly.
That's peanuts. That is peanuts to what they did to society, they're doing to society. They're deregulating, they're unstabilizing the banking market. Now we're going to have national banks because, you know, what I thought was the only bank that was doing the right thing is Bank of America. No, you're subject to problems also. Wells Fargo, who owns my mortgage? Are you going to go on trips in Vegas? Like, you're going to take trips? Really?
You know what I think they did, though, Willie? I think, and just a big shout-out to everybody who's listening. Right now I'm having a conversation with Willie Esco, whose clothing line made an indelible impact on hip-hop fashion, and he's joining me today to talk about Obama activism, the impact of politics from a Latino perspective. I see a lot of people tuning in and hitting me up in the chat room. I just extended the show a couple of minutes because I wanted us to finish our thoughts.
Right.
So right now, Willie, typically, you know, we're winding down the show, so people are like, hey, what's going on? But because I'm joined by a special guest, we're just going to pull this out just a little bit longer so we can get our thoughts out. But when you look, you know, you hear people say, yo, I was tooken. We're so wooden nickels here, and they have us focused on, whoa, $1 million renovation, because that's an unfathomable number to a lot of people. That's an I've never touched $1 million. I could touch maybe a couple thousand. I'm sure you've touched more. I can't comprehend $1 million. Just passing through size hands and signing checks. You know, I remember I signed my first $1,000 check when I was in business. I thought I was balling. My name on a check. You know what I'm saying? Paying somebody.
It's all relative, you know.
It is.
It's normal. But when I travel and, you know, have budgets and stuff, if the numbers become normal, so what is huge to you, $1,000 or whatever, $100,000 to me could be $100 to me. It's a big number, but if I had $100,000, if I get $2 million, that's a big number for me. You know what I mean? The $100,000,
right,
looks at, it's all relative. It's the law of diminishing return. You look at something,
yes,
after a while, you have a little bit of like, I don't need that no more. So I think my main objective to come on the show and wind down is sort of to let people know, number one, I have a brand out there.
Yes.
It's called Blanco Label, and that services the Latino community directly. I have a brand for myself and for more sophisticated consumer that likes to dress and like appreciates fashion. It's called LCM. It's the name of my former company, holding company. It's called La Cosa Nuestra, which is Our Thing in Latin. And it's called LCN for short, and it's sort of a new take on fashion, using all the trends of the day. And what I'm doing is really getting in tune with the politics aspect, because it's a really big venue for me to address. And you know, I train a lot of interns, and I put a lot of people out there to work. The one thing that I want them to understand is that you need to attain the knowledge so that when you see the okie doke happening, you know
mm-hmm.
how to maneuver. You can play dumb, but you know it's an okie doke move. And what the Republicans have been able to do is through 9/11, the Patriot
mm-hmm.
Act, torturing Guantanamo Bay, all the stuff, they were able to pull the wool over our eyes in order to rob us. So it's just one big scheme. Like, I'm going to get them nervous about terrorism. We're going to go over here, spend a lot of money, run up the budgets. Meanwhile, you're taking the per diem. You know what I mean? So it's like, it is key to get the knowledge out there and people comprehend. I think I commend you for inviting me on, because
I love talking politics. Well, what I would like to do, and I did mention this at the top of the show, is perhaps I can bring my camera out and, you know, maybe you, me, and a few other tastemakers, we sit down and just have the cameras watch us and have a frank discussion. I wouldn't even mind having them follow us for a year when we put something together, because if it weren't for people like you and I really actually engaged in politics, politics would still miss a lot of people. Yeah, we've got Barack Obama, but they see Cy Brown, they see Willie Esco, they see NY Oil, they see Wise Intelligent from Poor Righteous Teachers. They're like, wait a minute. Maybe they're saying something. So we, without sounding cliche-ish, we really have to be the change that we seek. We're the ones that we're looking for, because without us and people like you on the front lines with your clothes and your high-profile personality bringing things to the street and bringing it back to the hood, a lot of people, this would be over their head. It's gone. We got a black president. Keep it pushing.
Right, yeah. I mean, but that's what Barack is here. he's simplifying a lot of the process so you guys can really follow him. I watch a lot of MSNBC. For those who want to sort of take Politics 101, I will watch Keith Olbermann and Ray Maddow. They really break it down in simplistic forms. And if you watch them and you watch the president, they're in tune with the average American citizen. And although it is based around more government, which sometimes can be an issue, it sort of allows you to get in touch. And it's a format, like Keith does it in a sports format, you know, down from 5 to 1. And it was allowing me to sort of be a little bit more easier to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would channel surf prior to Keith having a hit show, I would channel surf and sort of take the information out. But no one would word it like these two shows would word it. The other guys are sort of more politics driven. And for those listeners that want to really know about the okie-doke, because it affects everyone. Like, we're going to get more money starting, I think, April 1st, we're going to get probably anywhere from $50 to $100 more in your paycheck because the president has signed a bill to allow us to get some more money in our paychecks. You would know that that's happening. So you'd be able to look for it in your paycheck. It wouldn't just be like, uh-oh, I got extra money in my paycheck. I better not tell my boss, you know what I mean?
Right, you have to pay attention.
Yeah, so that's the key with being aware. And it happened over time for me, and I hope that the president allows the youth to fast-track the knowledge that we need to know when we're getting jerked, when we're getting hosed around. Now these guys are not gods also, so they may fall short sometimes. But, you know, it's all there for us to see, and it's getting perfected as much as it's going to be in the history of politics, I would say, since Abe Lincoln. You know, Abe Lincoln righted a lot of things.
Yeah, he did.
Republican. But now, you know, you have a Democrat doing that, and they don't want that to happen. You know,
they don't. They definitely don't. I got a comment about you in the chat room. Sandy listens in every day. Big shout out to Sandy. How elegant. She's in Ohio, and she says, this is a really good topic. Your guest is on it. So thank you, Sandy, for listening in. Give me the website again so I can put it up in the chat room.
My website for the product, you can go look at. I haven't put up the new stuff yet, but BlancoLabel.com is the product that we have, the older product. We haven't put up the spring product yet, but you can go there, get information on the brand. And I have a brand called LCN, which is more exclusive. You can hit me up on Facebook to find a little bit more about that, Willie Esco. I have a Blanco Label on Facebook, and I'll soon have an LCN on Facebook. Blanco Label on Facebook will be purely political. Willie Esco on Facebook is really day-to-day activities, and LCN is going to be fashion-driven. It's going to be really hands-on for any consumer or anyone that has questions on fashion.
Oh, thank you so much.
You guys can look at.
No doubt. I put it up in the chat room, Willie, so everybody can click. It's now a clickable link. So everybody in the chat room, just click BlancoLabel.com. You can connect right to it. Thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed the 1 hour that you took out of your day to hang out with me right here and talk politics. So good looking out.
I went to the gym, too, last night, so it's hard to get up in the morning. I'm not a morning person. I went to the gym. I lost the keys to my car, so I was there a little bit longer, and it's such a fulfilling workout, but you need to stick to it and stay to the plan, okay?
I had I launched my life coaching practice at my house last month, and I put the pictures on Facebook, and it says Impact Launch Party. So for anybody that's on Facebook, you'll see I have this green, like, sleeveless shirt. And you know how you look at yourself in pictures? I was like, oh, gosh, baby, you got to work this out. I'll be going to the gym today. Everybody, it's your girl, Cy Brown. Today we talk politics for the full hour with Willie Esco. Check him out, BlancoLabel.com. It's your girl, Cy Brown. I'll see everybody tomorrow at 12 noon right here on Life Remix Radio. Peace.
This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions. hanging out, chilling with my girl, Cy Boogie.
That's right, Cy Brown on politicsremix.com.
Say word.